Good afternoon. We are back, or on, I guess. Yes, officially. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. We're going to wrap up the show this week, but you know what? It's a fluid situation. This is what happens. Planning to start a new show soon that would take my time slot, but that isn't developed yet. So those things happen. So I'm going to hang in there for a little while longer. Sorry. False alarm. Forget about what I said earlier in the week. So at least a little while longer of the Almost Hour. But I will, just so you know, I am going to go ahead and launch the What If It Is True podcast, which is kind of already in development. So that's coming along as well. So just putting another iron on the fire for now. We'll be all right. That's the way it goes. Lots of fun stuff to talk about this afternoon. Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles basically saying, hey, you know what? English wasn't the first language of America. We got to understand what we're talking about when we're talking about people, not a problem. Speaking of problems, talking about the heroin challenge that's out there and the opiate addiction that is rampant, which is just a symptom. And then Donald Trump saying he's going to fight the Freedom Caucus. Time to fight them because, you know, they're Republicans. So that's how you win, right? You fight your own. So we'll talk about that interesting tactic as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things. Talk about that every afternoon. Posted this over on my Facebook page, greatest rise in heroin use among white people, study says. And we've talked about this before, but this is, it's tragic that we see this, but it's so accessible. You know, it was prescription medication. That was the drug du jour a few years ago. Now it's heroin. It's just, it's so available and affordable that this is what's happening. It's also way more dangerous than anything else, right? The prescription meds, yes, odiable, but heroin, because it is so odiable, it's claiming lives. And I think that's why it's getting the attention that it's getting now in ways that it hasn't before, because of the fact that it is so dangerous. But we got a problem, and the problem is not heroin. And I think that somehow we need to wake up to that. The problem is not the drug. The problem is the person. And we've all got problems. We've all got our issues. We got things that we deal with. And we all have some degree of self-medication, I believe. Right? There's something that can get us out of whatever we're in, at least temporarily. And for some people, that's hobbies. If some, it's second jobs or things that they do with their time that's very focused outside of whatever it is that is eating them up inside. But the solution, I think, is to find that point of productivity. Is this productive or is it destructive? Because we're all going to do something. Everyone's going to do something. Now, as people of faith, I would hope that we would direct our energies toward things that are constructive, things that are generative, things that are generous, things that are creative, because that's how we're like God. God is a God of creation. God is a God of generation. Can we model that? And escaping into a drug addiction is not creative nor generative. But it's an easy out, because this is where people who, and believe me, I've done a lot of drugs. I've never done heroin. I have done psychoactive drugs, and I've done both severe what you call it, barbiturates, right? Those that really kind of take you into this mode of dreamy drunkenness. I've done drugs that are designed to hype you up with all kinds of energy and enthusiasm and positivity. I've done all of those. Never done heroin. But I do know this, that drug use is the easy thing. That's the easy thing. The tough stuff is deciding where is your voice of creativity. We've all got one because we're designed in what? The image and likeness of God. That says that we too have a creative and generative nature, image and likeness. The image is that of generosity. The likeness is that of creativity. So when we find that voice, this is when we begin to have the opportunity to express ourselves as we were created to be. And we have to have jobs. We have to have things that pay the bills. We have to do that. And sometimes, quite honestly, whatever it is that we're designed to do inherently, right? That which is part of who we are, that is that which is a major point of our existence, doesn't pay the bills. It's not employable. But that's okay. Because we've also gotten this crazy notion, and where this came from, I really don't know, because it's a disservice. And I think we got to realize that this concept of chasing your dreams, you know, do what you love and you'll never work another day. Well, you know, that's not true. That's not true, because Scripture also says is that we have to work. There's something about sweat equity. And sometimes those are the things that aren't the most fun. Now, Breadbox Media has been in startup since October of 2015. During that time, I haven't had a paycheck. That's crazy. Fortunately, I had savings and a lot of resources when it came to credit and equity galore, which is all gone now. So right now, as we're getting very close to the cusp of this cash flow, I have to do what I have to do. And I'm waiting tables. Now, I love the restaurant, and I do love that environment because I like the interaction. But there's a lot of other things I'd rather be doing with my time. But it pays the bills right now, and I have to invest that time. So we got to realize that there's this love and responsibility. You know, I know it's a different dynamic, but I think it's the same sort of ethic when we talk about love and responsibility in the sense of there are those things about which we will be passionate. There are those things that fuel us because we know we're firing on the cylinders, we know we're being creative, and we know we're being generative. Find it. Yes, find it. It might, if you are one of the fortunate few, blessed enough that you can actually live off of that, then do it. Do it and be even more generous and creative and make that happen. But don't assume that just because you're either A, really, really passionate about it, or B, really good at it, does not mean that that's a ticket to ride. It does not mean that. But it can mean you're not going to do heroin, which is pretty all right in the grand scheme of things, right? So if the end result is it saves you from a life of despair because you've at least found your creative voice and you're speaking that voice in the image and likeness of God, and as you speak that voice, you are loving God and loving others, what else do you want, right? I mean, think about that. That's kind of the dream come true. You've found your voice. You're speaking it authentically. You are loving God and loving others while you're speaking that voice. And you're being generative and creative. Just found it. There you go. That's how it works. Does that mean that your problems are solved and all worries are over? And you don't work another day in your life? No, I don't know where that came from. I should research and find out. If that is what you're waiting for, then you will do drugs. See, because we've got this bizarre notion that we're supposed to eventually kind of rise above everything, and it's like, oh, okay, this is all smooth sailing. It wasn't. It was never supposed to be tough, and I just made it tough. No, it's tough. It's going to be tough. There are days that are going to be tougher than others, and there are days that are going to be better than others, and there are times that you're going to be pretty content and happy, and there are going to be times when you're just going to be completely depressed and dejected. But you know what? This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad. Can you find a moment of gratitude even in that? Because now we're talking. Now here's the cylinders firing. Generative, creative, image and likeness of God. Focusing on the day that this is that we have the eternal presence that we have, the eternal present, the Holy Spirit in that presence, and what that looks like and how to engage and cooperate with the grace that is yours at that moment. And even through the tough stuff, even through the challenges, even through the things that aren't cool, we still maintain the attitude that we have of being focused on what is at hand and what is here. Yeah. Tough, challenging. Find your voice. Find your creative voice. Find your image and likeness. Know what that is, but it still may not be the be-all, end-all that makes everything what it is, right? Just might not be. And if it's not, that's okay. That does not mean you abandon hope. That does not mean you despair. That does not mean that you take a path of self-medication. No. But really find that voice, because it's there. We're all created. And I think generally what we do, here's the other key. What does Jesus say? Be like little children. What do little children do? They have a creative voice. Every child has a creative voice. My goodness, my kids are creative and brilliant because they're uninhibited by their creativity. My four-year-old runs around singing songs he makes up all the time. You know, my 9-year-old gets into projects and creates stuff out of clay and just wants to be in there doing stuff, building stuff of that nature, creating things of that nature. I don't want them to lose that. I want to nurture that. Does that mean they're going to be living off of their art? No. But does that mean that they're going to be living because of their art? You know what I mean? We just got the perspective so completely, I don't know, the American dream mentality is just, it's done us a disservice, done us a horrible disservice, and that's why we're on drugs. We need to hear a different message. We need to understand a different message. We need to start seeing a different picture. We can get this right. We can get it right. But it's pretty darn wrong right now because no one speaks this way. No one understands. This is what it's about. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. So Donald Trump now saying that he's going to fight the Freedom Caucus because hardline conservatism apparently has no place. And it's keeping him from getting things done because these were the blocks, right? These were the guys who said no to the health care reform. They want to see things their way. They are staunch conservatives. And I think in the sense of true conservatism seem to have at least a little bit of a platform, I believe, that is authentically conservative from what I can tell. And it's kind of what I said. I had this conversation repeatedly because, you know, I've always leaned right politically and always been in a more of a traditional sort of political approach, as odd as that is to many who know some of the crazy notions that I have, right, but that look very liberal. Generally speaking, I've always identified with the political right. And go back to the Reagan era, which is really when I began to first become truly politically aware. I've talked about this a lot. I was aware of the president's prior, but I really wasn't old enough to kind of go, okay, this is where I want to kind of place my allegiance because of what I see and understand politically. And so being a young guy, I guess, in what, high school, college, excuse me, no, forgive me, middle school and high school under the Reagan administration, it really was something that was pretty darn formative for me as a young guy, really becoming aware of what politics are about and what policy looks like and platforms and all these things that I began to embrace on the right. And I've always had that. I don't know what I say. I'm a Reagan Bush 41. I mean, there were, my goodness, what did we have? We had 12 years, right? We had 12 years of that policy that looked like something that was benevolent, traditional, at least concerned enough about real issues, humanity, solidarity. I mean, there was a lot of things that seemed to be happening in that time that seemed to make sense. Now, granted, there were other things that I didn't agree with. I got to be honest. I was no fan of the Iraq War. I was no fan of the hawkish attitude that even Reagan had. I mean, we're in a Cold War. I mean, think about that. But at the same time, values, principles, domestic policy, these were things that seemed to make sense to me. So, as I said throughout the election, Trump is not a conservative. I said that repeatedly. He's called a populist, but he's still more of a pragmatist, I believe, and kind of a utilitarian pragmatist, which is the worst of all kind. Pragmatism, to be able to kind of see the usefulness, right? I mean, that's kind of what pragmatism says. It's like, let's look at the big picture and let's see kind of how we can use this and how do we use it to our advantage and how do we make the most of this. In the truest sense, pragmatism isn't bad. It can be bad if you're utilitarianly pragmatic, meaning you're not just looking at the best of the situation and kind of going, okay, I see the big picture here. I see the pieces. We're going to put this together. We're going to make this work. Now it becomes, I see this and I'm going to make it work for me. I'm going to make it work to my advantage. And there's going to be a way to gain out of this. Pragmatism on its purest form says everybody wins. Let's find a way because we're going to find solutions. And a true pragmatist would actually find resourcing to allow the best of the situation at hand to be the truly best of the situation and flourish. A utilitarian pragmatist is going to look at this and say, I see a lot of stuff I can leverage. See a lot of things I can benefit from. And that may be a zillion different platforms of possibilities. And in those zillion platforms, as long as the end result is a win for the individual who is leveraging, then all is good. And that pragmatism, utilitarian pragmatism, as I'm calling it, may be a global vision disguised as a let's make this good. And the only reason why it's disguised as a let's make this good is because the utilitarian pragmatist who's puppet mastering this happens to be here, and that's what they're saying. Right? I know I'm speaking cryptically, and I know not everyone likes when I do that, but it's a big metaphor. It's a big parable is what it is, honestly, and I think that when you look at where we are, what we're dealing with, if somebody was a true conservative, they would say, hey, conservatives, let's get our act together. Let's be known for that brand of conservatism that was hallmarked by the Reagan era. I mean, how many times do you hear that? Reagan conservative, Reagan conservative. Hear that all the time. And Trump is no Reagan conservative. Not even a Bush 43 conservative, right? Which is different than a 41 and a Reagan conservative. He's not even in that ilk. So, you know, when you look at this challenge that we've got to where now at the point that, and as I've said before, it's going to have to, I think, the party's going to implode. Now, how do you do it? I mean, yeah, you got in the office and you got a majority in the House and Senate, but you can't get anything done. So what I said, this is when the challenges come. And I may be wrong because I've been wrong about a lot of stuff and I'll continue to be wrong. But I think right now, there's no second term for this president. There's just no second term. You don't come out of the gate with guns blazing, with all the hope in the world that everything is going to happen on track, faster than anybody ever imagined, and then have your Congress fight you. You don't do that and win any election. Midterms, it's done. Midterms are dead. The majority is already flipping. And I believe the Democrats are beginning to build a strategy that says, and we know how to capture the hearts of the moderates. That's how you win. That's how you win anything. Capture the heart of the moderate. Get them to understand that you're on their side. You're watching out for them. You've got their back because they're going to swing. They're going to go either way in any election. Enough of the country in that middle is going to make all the difference and make the decision. How do you appeal to them? Trump, in the heartland, appealed to the moderate vote. Not in the coastals, not in the major cities. That didn't happen, and he lost the popular vote. But can the moderate, can the Democrat now focus on the moderate enough to say, this is how we're going to take it? You know, the other interesting thing that's beginning to happen is there's kind of a convergence around, right? It's kind of wrapped back around to those that know that this president that they thought they had no choice but to vote for doesn't truly have their best interests, and those that didn't think that in the first place, but of course are now even all the more disenfranchised, there's an odd gelling of that community that's beginning to happen that really seems to be apolitical altogether. Where that goes is hard to say. But I do think, as I've said before, this partisan two-party system, partisanship in and of itself, I don't think is bad. I think when you've only got an either-or, then what do you do? And I think that's the challenge every time people get forced into that. What you cannot do, however, is splinter your support and splinter your base, which is what is going to happen with this Freedom Caucus if that happens. We've got to find a way for something new to emerge that could really be not moderate, but balanced, right? A balanced approach that says, okay, let's look at all of this and let's really figure it out. Because moderate to me is, again, I've never liked that word. Just sounds too wishy-washy. So moderate that you could be swayed in any given day, whichever the way the wind blows. Not cool for me. But at the same time, now is the time, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, yes, put our faith out there. Be people of faith and let that be convicting to you. But don't make that a platform issue. You don't need to, right? And I know that people don't understand this. Like the Planned Parenthood thing that people get upset when I say, hey, look, you know, let your faith fuel your ethos. Absolutely. Let it be what it is that you're about. And then act like a regular human being and just see what happens. See if you get respect that you never thought you would get. See if you earn the right to talk to people in ways that you would normally never have the opportunity to talk because you didn't put up a wall to them immediately. there's an amazing opportunity that exists for those who are solidly founded in their faith, but are willing just to live in the culture and function in the culture and talk intelligently about politics and policy issues and human dignity and all of these things that you cannot argue, can't argue. Because then what happens when we start talking faith, we pull faith into it, and then, well, as a Catholic, then, well, the Baptists hate it or whatever, right? I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. Let's be focused on what's important. Let's start there. Speaking of which, Archbishop Gomez out in L.A. certainly talking about the important stuff. We'll talk about that in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things. Talk about that 50 minutes after every afternoon. That's what it is. Not just after something. It is after something. Lunch. At least in the Eastern time zone, right? It's all relative. Shark shows up out of the crazy storm. So we actually have a Sharknado, apparently, according to the Australian news source here that was reposted on foxnews.com. Bull shark shows up after the storm. So they had the huge cyclone happening. And after this, nearby Rita Island, flooded, and a bull shark shows up. Wow. That, and then there, you see the photos of people like poking at it with their feet. Which, I mean, you do want to, it might be dead, but do you really want to take a chance on that? Like getting to, I mean, this is a bull shark. These guys are, they're killer sharks. They will eat people. Leave it alone. You know, let it just sit out there and rot and then make sure that it's safe. Then even then, I don't know. We're bizarre creatures, people, who want to tempt that kind of stuff all the time. Anyway, wanted to talk about what Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles is saying about the immigrant community. And, you know, we do forget. I mean, we talk about Tex-Mex. I thought about this last night because my wife made an amazing chili. It was really, really, really good. And my 9-year-old said, where do we get chili? I said, well, it's kind of a Tex-Mex thing. You know, and we talk about Tex-Mex like it's, I don't know, like it's a cuisine, right? Tex-Mex. It's a food. That's what it is. And we don't even think about the fact that the vast majority, the entire state, right, of Texas was Mexico. And it wasn't that long ago. And when you look at Florida, what do you have there? My goodness, we had Spanish immigrants, Spanish settlements, Spanish colonists there well before we got the 13 British colonies, and those guys didn't fight a Revolutionary War. Right, they just came here and set up camp, started doing their thing, governing themselves, and they were Catholic. So, we got a very myopic, short-sighted blindness to our own history that is clearly, clearly, clearly rich with Hispanic influence. Now you can go back and say, well, what about the Native Americans? Absolutely, right? Want to embrace that as well. But just because the British colonies managed to somehow have the greatest influence and we're English speaking, does not mean that's how the country was, this land was, began. It's simply not historically true. And this is what Gomez is trying to articulate to say, look, two things, Catholics were here first and Spanish were here first. It's kind of undeniable. And again, you could go back, well, Native Americanism, that was here first. And those guys had to get here. We understand that the Ice Age was enough that the path between Siberia and Alaska was a walkway. It was a very long walkway, but migration and following the, you know, for hunter-gatherers following food, they came here from Mongolia, Siberia, and settled into North America as Native Americans. They were truly here first. They didn't come here to conquer or set up governments or decide to have a superpower. They came here to eat because they were following a buffalo. That's what they did. And I, you know, we've got this attitude of superiority, this American exceptionalism, as if we got some sort of stake to claim because we, I don't know what, fought a war here and established a constitution. Yeah, and I know I talk this way, and I make people crazy, especially now. I've had veterans who are like, buddy, you just should leave this country if that's how you feel. And I've had that. I'm like, no, I don't think you hear me. I love this country if we understand what this country is, right? If we understand what it is. What is it? It's a land of opportunity. That's why the Asians came here in the first place. They were led here, right? I mean, do we think about that? I don't know that we even think about that. They were led here. They were spiritually led here by animals that brought them into this land of opportunity. We had Spanish. Granted, they were conquistadors and explorers and those looking for fortune, but they found it. They came here and managed to do that. Now, don't get me started on where those dynamics are and what happened and the pillaging and things of this nature. I don't want to even get to that point because the Incas had it pretty bad, right? The Mayans had it pretty bad because of Spanish settlements. But at the same time, there were those who came with their faith. There were those who came as missionaries who wanted to come to this country to say, this land, before there was a country established, and they wanted just to have the opportunity to bring what they believed here. And there was opportunity for that. And then you look at what happened in the British colonies, and there was opportunity for that. A land of opportunity is what this is and has been from the time the very first human feet crossed the Bering Strait. We want to make it a land of limitation. So when I say, if we understand what we love and why we love it, then maybe we can get somewhere. It's not enough just to simply say, our fathers died for this. People die for stupid stuff. I'm not saying that to be flippant. I'm just saying people defend things that are really indefensible, and they don't even understand why they're defending them. They're just standing their ground. But if we say, no, we're defending opportunity. If opportunity leaves, if opportunity escapes us, if the ability for others to come and find ways of, back to what we talked about in the very first segment, of being both creative and generative, if we lose that, we've lost it all. Because praise God, so far, even from the time of the first feet crossing that Bering Strait coming into North America, we have not had a dictatorial government. We have not had anyone here who is a totalitarian regimists who want to come in and limit the freedom that is a part of our opportunity. Not yet. In the thousands upon thousands of years that we've, I mean, we guess, based on what we understand archaeologically of the time span, 3,000, so it was, something like that, 3,000 to 5,000, don't hold me to it. It's a long time that we've had humans here in North America. No evidence of anything of that nature ever happening, and actually much more evidence to the fact that this has been a land of opportunity. If we get that right, and we get that as people of faith, we have to support that, because as people of faith, we want to be generative, right? And we want to be creative, and we want to mirror the image and likeness of God. We want to be grace-filled. We want to cooperate with that grace. We want to offer that grace. We want to find ways to give of ourselves and provide those opportunities for others. You know, we're not here to be hoarders. We're not here to be limited, to have a scarcity mentality. We're not here for any of that. We're here to say, yes, this is opportunity. This is a time that you can embrace. This is a time when we welcome you to live your dreams, to find what it is that makes you who you are, to be in this American experiment and experience. All of this is available to you. I don't know. Why, when we get something really good, do we want to just keep it for ourselves? I don't want to do that. I hear a great band. I'm like, wow, you know this band? Have you heard these guys? They're amazing. Go to a great restaurant. Do you know about this restaurant? This place is amazing. See a great movie? We share it. Why then do we say, this is ours, exclusively for us? We got a lot of space. Human resource is our greatest resource. If we get that right and we understand what we can do when we know how to resource humanity, and again, not that pragmatic utilitarian sort of concept, but just to give simple opportunity to those who are looking for that opportunity, can we do that? That's what Gomez is talking about. That's a Catholic ethos. That's a beautiful way to express ourselves as people of faith. That's the page we need to be on. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.